You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Weekday mornings from 6 to 9, it's the Joy Cardine Show. After 8, get two perspectives on the top state and national news on the Week in Review. This week, Foxconn, Charlottesville, and more controversial statements from the president. That's coming up tomorrow after 8 on the Ideas Network.
Now, Madison Mayor Paul Soglin ordered the removal of memorials to Confederate soldiers earlier today. The memorials are in the Forest Hill Cemetery on the city's near west side on public land. This comes on the heels of violence over the weekend in Charlottesville, Virginia, where white supremacists and others protested the removal of a statue of Confederate General Robert E. Lee. Baltimore also removed Confederate monuments earlier this week. Other cities and states have plans to do the same in the coming weeks and months.
And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Do you think that monuments that commemorate those involved in darker parts of our nation's history should be removed? Why or why not? And who do you think should decide? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Jim Grossman is the executive director of the American Historical Association. He joins us to talk about history, memory, and commemoration. Jim, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for inviting me. Good evening.
Well, obviously the big story around the country, but here we have in Wisconsin the removal of this memorial, not in a Confederate state, interestingly. Are there a lot of Confederate memorials outside the old Confederacy?
Yes, there are. I mean, obviously most of them are in the old Confederacy, but I think it's even possible that the last one that was built might have even been in Arizona. The governor of Maine actually spoke out, was it yesterday or today? I think yesterday, for some reason, saying that removing Confederate memorials would be like removing memorials to 9/11. So obviously this is a national issue and these things exist everywhere. Confederate memorials have been used from the time that they were first created, first built, in essence, as respectable ways to signify white supremacy. And so they're all over the country.
Can you talk about the eras in which a lot of Confederate memorials and monuments were built around the country?
Most of the first wave was between about 1895 or so and the second decade of the 20th century, which is, by the way, also sort of a period of a great amount of lynching, heyday of lynching and racial lynching. And then the second period would be 1950s through the 1960s. So in the first case, you have these memorials being built during the period when legally mandated racial segregation is being created in the South. The Jim Crow laws are passed in the 1890s mostly. And the other thing that's going on, which is interesting, is disfranchisement. African Americans are voting from a few years after the Civil War up into the 1890s. So the first batch of these monuments are being built when white Southerners are, in essence, creating a regime of segregation and disfranchisement. And then the second batch are being built during the period when they're defending it against the civil rights movement. So in both cases, what you're seeing are ways of saying something politely in order to make a political statement about white supremacy.
Are there monuments, is there a case to be made that there could be monuments put up after the Civil War, maybe by families after just remembering the massive loss of life of loved ones, regardless of the cause? Do these kind of monuments inevitably get attached to racism and the pro-slavery effort of secession?
Nothing is inevitable. So no, not inevitably at all. And so, yes, I'm sure that did happen. I'm sure that there are cases where that people put up statues to loved ones. But most of the statues that are arousing controversy are not statues to loved ones. I mean, statues to Robert E. Lee, Stonewall Jackson, that's very different here. And I do think that this is obviously a very complex subject. Communities should discuss this. Which is, I think, an important, wonderful thing to do for people to be discussing history and its significance. But there's a difference between different kinds of statues. Earlier on your announcement, you made a reference to statues of people involved in slavery or involved in the darker aspects of our history. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking here about not people who were involved. We're talking about statues to people who have no other national significance other than the creation of the Confederacy. That's it. So this isn't a matter of people involved in one thing and another thing, and we're going to choose what to honor them for. Stonewall Jackson, Robert E. Lee, many of these people have one piece of significance, and that is the establishment of the Confederate States of America, which, according to the states that established it, were established to preserve and protect the institution of slavery.
Talking to Jim Grossman, Executive Director of the American Historical Association, looking at the removal of Confederate statues and memorials. Related to your last point, I want to give a listen to President Trump in his press conference earlier this week talking about statue removal.
Many of those people were there to protest the taking down of the statue of Robert E. Lee. So, this week it's Robert E. Lee. I noticed that Stonewall Jackson's coming down. I wonder, is it George Washington next week, and is it Thomas Jefferson the week after? You know, you really do have to ask yourself, where does it stop?
And Jim, from what you're just saying, you don't buy, it sounds like, that slippery slope argument.
No, I think it shows both an ignorance of history and a distortion of history. George Washington and Thomas Jefferson are not being honored because they're slaveholders. They're being honored because of their role in creating a democratic experiment. They were flawed individuals. The Constitution is a flawed document. The Declaration of Independence is a flawed document. But the creation of the United States of America is a historically significant event, and there is no reason why we shouldn't commemorate the individuals who played a central role in that great but flawed democratic experiment of the late 18th century. The creation of the Confederate States of America, I'm going to be blunt, has nothing to recommend it. And because if you look at the documents, the state of Mississippi was very clear in its Declaration of Secession, which is similar to the Declaration of Independence, obviously, or comparable, analogous. Our position is thoroughly identified with the institution of slavery, the greatest material interest of the world. This is very clear. This is what's going on here. And so what I would call on President Trump and your senators and your representatives is to, regardless of their position on memorials, it's a complicated issue, regardless of their position on any other interpretive or policy issue, is I would like to hear them say one simple sentence. The Confederacy was a bad idea. That simple. And then we can argue about memorials.
We'll go to our callers now. Maddie is with us in Black River Falls. Maddie, hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question that would it be out of place to maybe have some of the more positive individuals have some sculptures or some other indication or plaques to identify where the goodness or where the severity of having the slavery to explain things on a plaque or with each statue or with an individual, maybe just the bust, to show that there's two sides to the story, but give a little bit more on the positive side, and I'll take my answer offline.
Maddie, thanks for the call. And we heard from historian Eric Foner earlier this week on the show, Jim, saying, where are the memorials to African Americans who served in Congress in the South during the Reconstruction era, or memorials to the slaves in the same vicinity as the Civil War generals?
Or memorials to people who were lynched. I mean, we memorialize victims quite frequently, as we have for 9/11, appropriately. Where are the memorials to people being lynched? Now, I always have a problem. I think it's very important to be fair to both sides of an argument. However, I don't think that, and I'm perfectly happy to engage in a debate, by the way, with anybody who wants to debate about whether or not the Confederacy was a good idea or a bad idea. But I don't think that in our civic culture right now there are two sides to this as to whether the Confederacy was a good or a bad idea. So the two sides, in fact, might well be two ways of thinking about dealing with the problem of how to eradicate slavery. Okay, I'm okay with that, if you could find that sort of debate. And I think that would be a great debate for a classroom. These are all interesting historical questions, but there aren't two sides here any more than in Charlottesville. You can equate neo-Nazis, who are accompanied by neo-Confederates, but neo-Nazis, and people who are opposed to racism, who might well have politics that are further to the left than other people. And if you want to say there's two sides, there's people who are further to the left of other people and people further to the right of other people, that's fine. But neo-Nazis, no, that's not the other side. I'm sorry.
We're talking to Jim Grossman, Executive Director of the American Historical Association, looking at the history of Confederate monuments and the decision to remove them, not just in the South. One went away today in Madison.
You can tell us what you think at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Do you agree with Mayor Soglin's decision to remove this plaque? Do you see this move as one that divides or unifies the country? And how do you think that we should approach monuments associated with slavery and racist aspects of American history? You can tell us what you think at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time.
This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with Jim Grossman, Executive Director of the American Historical Association, talking about the removal of Confederate memorials. Today, Madison Mayor Paul Soglin announced the removal of a plaque at the Confederate Rest section of a local public cemetery on public land.
And you can weigh in, tell us what you think by calling 800-642-1234. Do you think that Madison should remove the plaque at the Confederate Rest section of the cemetery? Do you think that this is a move that unites the country, or do you see it as divisive? And how do you think we should be looking at the Civil War, slavery, segregation, and other racially charged parts of American history? Call us at 800-642-1234.
We'll go to our callers. Greg with us in Kenosha. Greg, hi, you're on the air.
Yes, my comment was, it's a part of the history, and we cannot just say, oh, the Confederates, they like white supremacist ideology and like ideal monuments. But it's about the people who actually fought during the Civil War and actually fought for their ideas and died for it. And monuments like represent them and their families who actually believe in the ideas. And I'm not a white person, and like people just need to get over themselves. Yes, white supremacists believe in that, but it doesn't mean that we need to get on their level and start ruining every monument. In future, maybe our beliefs will change again. So let's ruin the rest of the monument that actually exists that does not come up with our beliefs now. Just let's live on. Let's build other monuments actually which represent our times, instead of like ruining everything that we don't believe anymore.
Greg, thanks for the call. Leave the monuments up, I guess, as a monument to the time in which they were built, and build some more of our own, Greg says, Jim.
I can understand that position, and I think that if we left the monuments up and we made it clear on the text of them what the historical content, why they were built, they were not, again, in most cases, they were not built to commemorate heroes. They were built for a political purpose to create consensus of white supremacy. If we improve the quality of history education in our schools so that students were learning a little more about this. But I also think that we have to consider what it is that you're honoring when you build a monument, because monuments stand as kind of centerpieces of civic culture. And yes, some communities might decide to leave them up, some take them down. I think it's imperative for every community to have this discussion, and to have this discussion in the context of some kind of historical knowledge. If there is a Confederate monument in Kenosha, I want to know why it's there before we decide to take it down or not. And I also think that to the extent that Confederate monuments do symbolize some kind of approval of the reason for establishing the Confederacy in the first place, then I want to see at least the local political leadership renounce that. Say, okay, we're going to keep this up because it's part of our history, but we're also going to say that the Confederacy was a bad idea. I'm not sure whose congressional district Kenosha is in, but whoever it is, should be asked whether he or she is willing to say the Confederacy was a bad idea.
I want to ask, as we start to wrap up, Jim, I mean, we've been arguing about how to remember the Civil War since the Civil War ended. Basically, what would you like to see in memorials in the South, in the North, wherever, that can be a positive contribution to how we start to think about this?
Well, I think, first of all, we need more, we probably need more Civil War memorials that make it clear that the Civil War in its outcome, because that's what you often are remembering, in its outcome was a war of liberation, because that's what it was. The Civil War, at great national cost, the 600,000 people who died, that's a huge cost. The Civil War liberated 4 million Americans from enslavement. That's a tremendous accomplishment. So these people, these 600,000 people, they died for something. Or at least those who died on behalf of the people who were being liberated. But these people died for a cause. So the Civil War should not be seen as something of a tragedy, other than the loss of life and people being, all wars are tragedies. But the Civil War is a tragedy only in the sense it's too bad we had to fight it. If we had not had that war, how much longer would slavery have lasted as an institution in American life? So I think that's one thing that I think is absolutely imperative in all monuments to the Civil War, is the cost, the emphasis on the number of people who died and how tragic it is that people had to die in a fight over something like this. And then the other is the accomplishment, which was the liberation of 4 million people. That's what the Civil War story is.
We'll leave it there for now. Jim, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Jim Grossman is the executive director of the American Historical Association. He joined us to give us a historian's perspective on removing Confederate monuments after, of course, the national debate. And now today in Madison, the mayor, Paul Soglin, announced the removal of a federal plaque from a Madison cemetery on public land.
Great Lakes scientists are concerned about possible federal budget cuts affecting their work. The fate of federal spending next year on Great Lakes research is still foggy, but the potential of less money to study water pollution and other issues has some scientists speaking up. Chuck Kornbach reports.
Congress has started to reverse some of President Trump's budget plans announced a few months ago for the Great Lakes. It now looks like the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative won't be zeroed out, and neither will the Sea Grant program. But it's a little too early to say for sure about possible smaller cuts. Scientists are also concerned about potential trimming to research funded by the Environmental Protection Agency and other federal departments. Scientists like UW-Milwaukee's Sandra McClellan. McClellan dumps a bucket of water she's just pulled from the Lake Michigan Harbor in Milwaukee. The professor of freshwater sciences and her students take a lot of samples from the lake. McClellan says her team is typically looking for bacteria.
What we really want to know is what is the load of these bacteria from the city when it rains? The storm water, leaking sewage, sometimes when it's really severe, combined sewer overflows.
Some of McClellan's work has been federally funded. As the UW-Milwaukee research vessel, the Niske, moved across the harbor, she was asked what studies would be slowed or harmed if research money was cut.
I don't even know where to start.
McClellan then talked about work she's done to reduce pollution at Milwaukee beaches. The studies are entering a new phase looking at the source of harmful bacteria.
So we have an experiment deployed now up the shoreline at a secret location buried with E. coli. And we're going to see who's the last guy standing and what's the genetics of those E. coli.
Other researchers at the UW-Milwaukee say they also worry about plans to take away federal dollars. Professor Harvey Bootsma says cuts might delay a scientific analysis of whether there are proper limits on phosphorus going into Lake Michigan. He says agencies like the Wisconsin DNR are trying to decide what level of the chemical is right to provide more food for fish, but not adding to harmful algae.
We don't quite have the answer to that yet. And it may be that you can't do both of those completely to your satisfaction. You may have to find some compromise there.
According to a supporter of federal budget cuts, a middle ground is all he wants. Sterling Burnett of the Illinois-based Heartland Institute says the Trump administration isn't trying to stop science funding, but Burnett says Washington has to start reducing debt and deficits.
We have to tighten our belts, and that means the federal government has to get back to its core responsibilities. And you won't find energy mentioned in the Constitution. You won't find environment mentioned in the Constitution. You'll find national defense.
Burnett says it may be time for states like Wisconsin to step up spending on Great Lakes research. But UW-Milwaukee Freshwater Sciences Assistant Dean Eric Leaf says that doesn't seem likely.
Increasingly, we're seeing, for example, departments of natural resources shrinking or losing their scientists.
Leaf also says the Great Lakes are an international body of water, and it's up to national governments in the U.S. and Canada to fund most of the studies. The budget discussions will resume next month when Congress returns to Washington. But even programs that might escape a big slicing this year are gearing up for several years of battle. Moira Harrington is with Sea Grant.
I think we fully expect in every year of this remaining administration to see this sort of, you know, attack on any kind of environmental science program.
Harrington says Sea Grant and other agencies will just have to have faith in their mission and be prepared to prove their value to elected officials. Chuck Quernbach, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, the trade deal NAFTA is getting a new look this week with the beginning of a contentious renegotiation process. We'll find out what's at stake.
The solar eclipse keeps getting closer. We'll check out the science behind the event and why it creates such a sense of wonder.
And on Food Friday, we'll learn how to make our own versions of store-bought treats at home, from Oreos to Cheez-Its.
That and look at the top news of the day coming up tomorrow here on Central Time.